volunteers to support young children through reading, especially at shelters in Altadena, Pasadena, and Pacific Palisades.
La organización Families in School Read LA está reclutando voluntarios para leer cuentos a niños afectados por los incendios, especialmente en albergues de Altadena, Pasadena, y Pacific Palisades.
Information is available by emailing Sandy Mendoza at smendoza@familiesinschools.org. Families in School is a not-for-profit 501c3 organization.
Para recibir más información, mande un correo a Sandy Mendoza a smendoza@familiesinschool.org.
This message is brought to you by Radio Bilingüe Public Radio.
This is Feminist Magazine, a weekly radical radio show and podcast produced by a diverse collective of feminists. And every week we bring you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist and engage. Because we want you to know a little bit more about Feminist Magazine, who we are and how we do it, and why you'll want to support feminist radio on the air on KPFK every week. And I'm Lynn Harris-Ballin, your host today, and this is what feminism can sound like.
We are those who are rising from Manila to Miami, building trust. When the rape and the suffering to stop the fascist tyranny, organize as one. We are rising. We are rising. We are rising now. And in this land.
It's easy to, you know, to be depressed and get even defensive, and it actually feels like we may have 4 years of very intense defensive work ahead of us. But my guest is none other than the California director of the Working Families Party, Jane Kim. I want to focus on where we have won, where progressives were successful, and where good people were elected, and they're going to be coming into office in the next year. It's not all doom and gloom. So I'm looking forward to some of the good news that Jane Kim has to share, as well as hearing about her vision for how the Working Families Party can continue to build on its electoral victories and expand its reach. If you're not aware of their victories, I'm going to tell you. Jane Kim from the Working Families Party. She spent her career serving California working families. She's a former San Francisco supervisor, where there she led the way to make community college tuition free for all San Franciscans. She won a citywide $15 minimum wage and secured full-time nurses for homeless shelters in the city. She's fought for affordable housing. She authored and passed powerful tenant protections. And she's, you know, as we all know, former elected official. So she also was the California political director for the Bernie Sanders 2020 presidential campaign. You're bona fide if you had anything to do with Bernie Sanders in 2020, for sure, right? So as a longtime organizer, civil rights attorney, she's with me. Are you with me, Jane?
Hi, Vilma. Thank you for having me on.
I'm so glad you're with us. So let's start with some good news. So tell me some about the wins that the working families were able to secure across California this past November. So there's actually some hopeful stuff happening in the Golden State for you all, right?
Yeah, the backdrop of some demoralizing and incredibly disappointing loss nationally with the House and the Senate and the White House. Here in California, we had a ton of local victories. Working Families Party endorsed 134 candidates, and 78 have now won their races for school board, for city council, board of supervisors, and state legislature. And this is incredible, given the fact that every single one of our candidates were outspent. If they are the Working Families Party candidate, they were the candidate that rejected corporate donations, was running to be held accountable by and to represent working families across California. And it's great to know that locally that 78 of our candidates have won and will be building a progressive bench across the state.
Yeah, so exciting. And tell us specifically about some of the ones that were right here in our backyard. Like, I'm excited about Latifah Simon because she ran as both as a Dem, as a working family. So tell us a little bit about that win.
Mm-hmm. So here in the Bay Area, we had a number of incredible women of color that ran in highly competitive and very expensive races, including the Board of Supervisors. And most notably, we had 5 API women win their Board of Supervisor seats in very expensive competitive races. Mm. Nikki Bass won her seat to the Alameda Board of Supervisors that was highly contested.
She was definitely on my list to talk about, but go ahead.
Yes, she was vastly outspent by her male opponent who had money from crypto and tech libertarian venture capitalist. Nikki, meanwhile, had been supported by labor and, as you know, was a longtime community organizer before she became the president of the Oakland City Council, organizing garment workers in Chinatown. Her win is huge because this could be a lifetime seat. There are no term limits on the Alameda Board of Supervisors, yet they control and invest back millions, billions of taxpayer funds that can address important equity issues like poverty and public health and homelessness. And so I'm very excited. I think that she will be by far the most progressive voice we've seen in Alameda in at least 2 decades.
Wow, that is exciting. And you mentioned this briefly, but tell us about some of that corporate funding, how it continues to erode American politics and how working families, what's your strategy around combating that? It's amazing that all the working family candidates take a pledge not to accept corporate money and to be accountable to voters. But how in the, you know, post-Citizen United world, mm-hmm. how does it really work?
It's tough. I'm not going to lie. It is a very tough position for our candidates to take to decide to represent actual residents and voters in their districts before powerful moneyed interests, because it gives you such a huge advantage in your race. And I forgot to mention some of the other women that won their supervisor seats, but Connie Chan and Jackie Fielder, Myrna Melgar and Cheyenne Chen all won their San Francisco Board Supervisor races.
Right on.
And
yeah, Betty Say her name. I love it.
And Betty Young, a progressive Asian American woman who was running against basically a Republican, won her seat for Santa Clara Board of Supervisors. And we also had a few other women of color candidates that won city council seats. Phoebe Shin Vanquette in Foster City, Pamela Campos in San Jose, Carol Fife in Oakland, who won her reelection, and Carolyn Benuelos in Santa Rosa. And again, all of these women were outspent and won. And what my takeaway was, when community and labor and individual activists invested in a race together as a coalition, we can win and beat back money. It's not easy. It is certainly a lot of work, but it does involve some money and a very robust field campaign involving door knocking, which the other side, isn't as well versed at as we are. They run what we call an air game, meaning mailers and digital ads and TV ads. We run a ground game, meaning we are going to come and directly knock on your door or call you or text you. And that's why volunteers matter so much during these election cycles, because we will always be outspent, but we can always out-volunteer the other side when community comes out. Because remember, these candidates have taken a pledge to only take resources from the community. And so in turn, we have to give back to that commitment by showing up for them.
Yeah. I also want to ask you a little bit to tell us how Working Families talks about third-party candidates without being dismissed. You know, there was a lot of talk about Jill Stein and, you know, just a lot of people throwing sand on her, like, get out. Like, so how does Working Family address that when people are so locked into this two-party system and when you really want some change? I mean, it's happening in Puerto Rico. It can happen. But what is there certain talking points you use so that people don't automatically think, oh, you're just a spoiler, oh, you don't have a chance? Why would I even try when we're locked into this duopoly? Mm-hmm.
Well, our national director, Maurice Mitchell, likes to say we are a non-delusional party that is serious about securing governing power for working people. And so what that means is, could people ask, well, then are you running against the Democratic Party or are you running and organizing within the party? And the answer is both. Sometimes we will work within the party. And an example of that is that we did endorse Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in their race for U.S. president this year. And in other cases, we will challenge moderate corporate Democrats, largely at the local level. For example, with candidates like Nikki Bass in Alameda or Cheyenne Chen in San Francisco or Betty Young in Santa Clara. So the idea is that we need a multi-pronged strategy in order to win governing power. And, you know, while the Harris-Walz decision was a tough one for some of our activists, given so many of the disagreements that we have with the Democratic Party, we ultimately felt that it was better for working families for a Harris-Walz administration versus a Trump-Vance administration, and that if we were to decide which administration under which we would rather be organizing, that it was the Democratic Party administration. And so that's one thing that we are very clear about. Two, you know, but the reason why we exist is because we've identified, you know, a couple of major issues in the current two-party structure. And one is that the Democratic Party has been bleeding working class voters of all races for several election cycles. It did not just begin with Harris, but, you know, it also wasn't countered by the Harris campaign either. And so the Working Families Party has been building towards this moment. We are trying to build a party that is for and by working Americans here. And we believe that the current two-party system really limits the ability of working Americans to have electoral successes, which is why which is what we are building and forming for.
And that's the voice of Jane Kim. She's the California director of the Working Families Party. What most surprised you, Jane? What made you go like, wow, okay, I didn't see that coming, and you were excited about that development? Is there anything you could share about that?
Well, I wasn't expecting to win as many races as we did locally. Mm. I'm really thrilled about the 76 candidates that have won up and down state, because this is a bench that we need to build. And the vast majority, over 90% of our candidates, are people of color, largely women. And this is a bench that we need to be building for the decades to come. It may not feel like it, but this is the beginning of the end of Trump. This is his last term. And we have to do all that we can to be building a strong bench to counter what MAGA and the right-wing authoritarian regime is building on the other side. And we are building that here in California. I'd say the second thing that surprised me, but it surprised me kind of earlier in the cycle, was when I started to go door knocking in California. Mm. Due to my position, I was able to travel around the state and door knock in Sacramento, in San Diego, in San Bernardino, Riverside, Los Angeles, San Francisco, of course, and Santa Rosa. And I door knocked at least twice a week. And I was surprised by the number of voters that I talked to that were considering or that agreed to vote for a WFP candidate locally, but then mentioned to me that they were considering Trump at the top of the ballot. And it took me a while to digest the, you know, what I viewed as kind of incoherent voting, but made sense to the voters that I was talking to. And ultimately, what I heard loudly and clearly from at least a segment of voters, right, is that people are unhappy with the current state of affairs here in this country. Mm. Inequality is real. And people feel, even if they're doing financially a little bit better than they were before, that they can buy a whole lot less with what they're making, whether it is because of rent prices, homeownership prices, grocery prices, gas prices, and people didn't know where to lay the blame, but they didn't like what they were seeing with the incumbents. And so more than it being a right-wing shift in California, what I felt more was an anti-incumbent shift. So in this case, it happened to be a Biden-Harris administration that people were maybe reflecting their disappointment with. But it wasn't necessarily a rightward shift.
Yeah, I agree with you with the incoherence, because I happen to have been on the ground in Pennsylvania in Arizona, would see the vote. And in Arizona, they elected the first ever Latino senator out of Arizona, Ruben Gallegos, and yet they voted for Trump. So I totally understand that. But I was also comforted that there were mass calls and organizing efforts that seemed to happen right after the election. I mean, working families just hit the ground running about that. So tell us about their strategy. I know they have block and build. They have four quadrants about protecting institutions, supporting people. Talk to us a little bit about their overall tactic to get us to true political power.
Yeah, so, you know, because it was always a 50-50 outcome that Trump Vance could win this election, we have also, alongside our election work, been preparing for this result. And so we were ready to go with our mass calls, which we would love folks to join if they haven't. Over 100,000 folks joined us or later watched our first mass call post-election to figure out how to plug in. And there is an ultimate swelling of interest in how to engage in this new administration, which is great. And yes, we have a block and build strategy, meaning that we need to block, protect, and shield communities under threat, important civil society institutions, so that we can prepare for the next democratic transition in 4 years. And meanwhile, we need to continue building. And so what I had spoken about in terms of winning 70 working family party candidates this past November is a huge part of how we were building an infrastructure at the local and state level to counter what MAGA is building across the country. And we need to do that with champions who are actually going to elect everyday Californians and working families. Part of the discontent that I heard at the doors was that people felt that both the Republicans and the Democrats were ignoring everyday folks and instead were more an ally of billionaire and big corporate interests. This is a huge problem for our country when we feel that both parties are ignoring our needs. And so we really need to build a bench of folks that are giving voters hope and then actually transforming policy at the local and state level. So if Congress, as we've seen, has refused to raise the minimum wage in over 20 years, then we need to do that here in cities across the state of California, like we have in San Francisco and Los Angeles and Santa Monica. We need to raise it statewide. If we are seeing that that Democrats and Republicans are refusing to act on immigration and healthcare and tuition-free public college at the national level, then these are the things that we should be doing here locally and statewide. And one of the massive advantages that California has that several of our other states do not is that not only do we have a more progressive electorate, which voted for Bernie Sanders as their Democratic nominee in 2020, overwhelmingly, in 47 out of 53 congressional districts. We also are a fairly wealthy state. We're one of the largest economies in the world, which means that we're able to afford to implement dream policy ideas that other states and municipalities may not even be able to fantasize about. We can make tuition-free public college a reality here in California. We can pass Medicare for All in California, and we should do it. It's almost a responsibility that I feel that California has to the rest of the nation to showcase what it means to pass an agenda that actually uplifts everyday Americans and show that government can do this.
I mean, I love that, but I think about statewide and the Golden State, our own governor, Gavin Newsom, and he seems to me such a like a mixed bag for progressive since he's vetoed some really hard-fought bills. I went off the top of my head about migrant workers, and he tries to promote California as a sanctuary city, but then sometimes he's, you know, not for us. So he seems like such a mixed bag to me, somewhat of a paradox. What are your thoughts about Newsom in 2028?
Well, we're going to have to do a lot of organizing work. Gavin isn't the governor of the working Californians yet, but he is someone that does listen to where the pulse of the voters are. And so we can't just expect that Gavin will do the right thing. We have to organize him to do the right thing. And that means showing up. We have a super majority of Democrats in both houses in Sacramento. And you're right, we still have not passed really landmark legislation that California should have passed, examples being things like expanding healthcare, expanding the concept of tuition-free college. We've also had some great wins. We're the first state to have enacted ordinances like paid sick day that now states across the country have enacted. We were the first state to enact $15 minimum wage. We should also then be celebrating those victories and thanking our electeds when those things pass, so they know that those are things that they should continue to do. So I think it's a mix of organizing. One is that we want to elect folks that are already with us, that we know will fight for us. And then second, we need to organize our bases so that more moderate, corporate-friendly Democrats will veer our way on policy issues.
Yeah, speaking to you, I'm feeling hopeful, Jane. I think something's going to happen here. We got a couple years to get ready. So as we wrap up here, what's kind of the top couple of things that you suggest for people to do and right now in 2025 to get ready for the midterms, to get ready to blunt 4 years of number 47? What are your top suggestions for our listeners to get out there and not be demoralized, but make 2025 a working families party type of year?
Well, one, consider joining Working Families Party or at least checking us out. You can start out by texting 30403 and we will get you started. You just input your zip code and we will text you ways that you can join us, join events. And of course, if you ever get tired of it, you can always press stop. We had over 100,000 people watch our post-election day call, and you can watch these on youtube.com/workingfamilies. Please also join us on Instagram and Twitter at California Working Families to learn more. We have a number of events coming up in San Diego, in Inland Empire, in Los Angeles, next around the state, so you can meet us in person. You can also email me at jkim@workingfamilies.org. We want to organize you. We want to be your political home where you are engaged in the work of making change for all of our communities. And yeah, I am very hopeful in terms of what we're capable of, but I think the most important thing is that we can never take our foot off the gas pedal. Just as we can overturn the right-wing agenda that Trump is currently leading over the next 4 years, they can also continue to organize as well. And that is, in some ways, the beauty of the democracy that we have to fight to preserve, is a state where we are fighting in the realm of ideas. We just want to win. And that involves some really hard work. It means talking to our neighbors. It means talking to our family members and listening to one another, but also really bringing people on our side about what a government that actually works for working people can look like, and that this is a reality that we can achieve.
Jane Kim, that's a wonderful way to end. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Jane Kim, California Director of the Working Families Party. She's been my guest. There's a lot of marching orders there. I was part of that 100,000 people mass call. These folks are serious. And just to hear her say they're going to have events in San Diego, the Inland Empire, I mean, the whole state, they really have a strategy for the entire state. So if you're tired of Tweedledee and Tweedledum, the duopoly, there are a lot of ways to combat it. I mean, so as I move to wrap up and what we're facing, we really need community voices. We need community spaces. We need non-corporate organizations and platforms and aligned folks. So that I want to thank my guest, Jane Kim, director of the California Working Families Party. Be well. Join us in creating community and staying connected to each other.
We are those who are rising from Manila to Miami, building trust in solidarity. Love is our bond. And in the streets we are marching to win the rape and the sun.
dare to interrupt the violence. To those who expose the truth and break the silence. Warriors who work to open up the prison bars. Valiant souls who stand up against the unjust wars. Multitudes who defy walls along the border. Masses who unify to protect our order. Rebel minds who unionize for workers' rights. Fearless hearts who fight to defend trans lives. Those who take back their land and their health. Those who seek to redistribute the wealth. Youth who demand a right to education. Those who reclaim political power in their nation. We cry out, say her name. We chant, love, trust, hate. And we will not be erased. It's we who decide our fate. We are rising. We are rising. We are rising now. And in this life, we are rising. We are rising. We are rising now. And in this life, we are
women who endured violence and degradation, slavery, trafficking, and mutilation, rape and abuse, racist discrimination. Those who survived labor exploitation, colonization and gentrification, imprisonment, migration and militarization, homophobia and transphobic aggression, violence by police, reproductive oppression. But from the pain we will open eyes, awaken hearts and awaken minds, and that demands we intensify. Strategically we are organized. Together we can raise the vibration through our action and imagination. Respect, trust and communication, and love for our future generations. Intersectional, inclusive, we come. Collective power is how this is won. We keep it rising like the fire of the sun. We will rise like the sun. We will rise like the sun.
Cleaning up after wildfires like Los Angeles has experienced is hazardous. The ash and dust that remain can be toxic since all kinds of materials were burned, including plastics, lead, asbestos, electronics, chemical products, and more.
Limpiar los escombros después de un incendio, como los ocurridos en el condado de Los Ángeles, es peligroso. La ceniza y el polvo que quedan pueden ser tóxicos, ya que se han quemado todo tipo de materiales, incluyendo plásticos, plomo, asbestos, aparatos electrónicos, productos químicos y más.
This is why wildfire cleanup can only be done by specially trained workers. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers can perform debris removal at no cost, but only after a right of entry form is submitted. The form can be found online at recovery.lacounty.gov, and the deadline to complete it is Monday, March 31st, 2025.
Por eso la limpieza después de un incendio en comunidades la deben realizar solamente trabajadores especialmente capacitados. Ingenieros del ejército están removiendo los escombros gratuitamente, pero solo para residentes que completen en línea una forma de derecho de entrada. Esta forma está disponible en Eliminación de Escombros, El Condado de Los Ángeles se recupera. Y la fecha límite para llenarla es el lunes 31 de marzo del 2025.
This message is brought to you by Radio Bilingüe Public Radio.
You're listening to Feminist Magazine on KPFK on 90.7 FM and kpfk.org. I'm your host today, Lynn Harris-Ballin.
So I don't have family and I don't have the resources. So when you don't have the resources, you have to go and find them.
We're going to go to Central Ohio, where a single mom's collective hosts a resource pantry.
We're just looking for resources that we can just give to moms with no barriers to entry, with no requirements, you know? And so that's what we're all about.
I'm Amy Gastelum. Stay with us.
Things like that, and now I'm shopping. This is a fridge. This is where we have all our veggies. As you can see, the veggies. I want some blackberries.
It's a sunny Sunday morning. Rugi Ingade sorts through a refrigerator stocked with fresh berries and tomatoes. This is the Motherful Resource Pantry. She's one of a handful of women helping to stock the shelves before it opens at 10. But she's also shopping.
We have a lot of things for evening nights. Oh, banana fritters. Look at this. I love mushrooms. I love raviolis. I'm taking this home. You know, even a dessert. Everything comes from Trader Joe's. We've got all of these to take home.
There are a few local companies that donate, but Rugi's right. Most of the food comes from Trader Joe's. They give away stuff they can't sell to local organizations. Motherful serves single moms like Rugi and their families. They know that having enough healthy food is especially important to kids' health and development. Here's one of the founders, Lisa Woodward.
Well, I'm super creative, and that's what I like to do is find ideas and think of ideas. I was a teen mom, but I was super good at finding resources. I see some younger moms that are just having a harder time to like maneuver the path. And that was never really hard for me because of just how good I am at just finding things. And so I like to continue that on, just finding more resources. But that's me. Like, I like to find stuff.
When they first started, Lisa and her daughter Ginger would wake up early before school to pick up the food.
And then we would drive back home and I would get her out and get her dressed for school, take her to school, and then bring the food to the food pantry and put it away. So that's the beginnings of it. And then we finally hired someone to pick up the food every day because it was getting a lot. But we're happy to have it, and it's all high quality, yummy food.
Motherful doesn't check IDs or pay stubs, and they don't ration what people can take.
We have tons of fruits and vegetables. We get a lot of meat and eggs, some surprises. Sometimes Trader Joe's will give us buckets and buckets of flowers, or we get a whole lot of asparagus at once. You never know. You never know. But it's all good stuff. And our moms volunteer and just help it keep going, our pantry.
Besides food, the pantry is packed with diapers and baby formula. There's detergent, shampoo, and even clothing. Black Lives Matter signs hang from the rafters. It's organized enough to find the essentials, but unexpected treasures like romance novels also surface here. Motherful's pantry is sort of like going to an auntie's house and searching through the spare fridge she keeps in the garage. It's almost 10, time to open for business. Some of the helpers take off, but the ones who stay are hoping they're going to see some babies today.
Hey, that baby deserves all the pictures.
Make her pink. That's what I'm telling you.
Love you too. Hey, that baby deserves all the pictures.
The volunteers take a seat around a table, and they stay there until the early afternoon. Hearing them talk and laugh makes it cozy. Meanwhile, a young woman walks in.
What you getting?
Some whack because there's a shortage, so I'm just going to take a few.
Kay Riley stocks up on formula for her newborn daughter, Wisdom, then asks a volunteer for help finding the right size diapers.
Excuse me, sir. Do you know what size these might be?
Which size are you looking for?
Newborn.
The smallest ones we got, right?
Yes. It's just ones.
Yeah.
You can wear ones too, so that's
yeah.
Fine. On her way out, Kay stops when she sees a pile of books.
Have you gotten books from here before?
I have. I actually read one of them already, which is really good. And they have a book club as well. So.
Are you part of it?
I am not yet, but I tend to be after I get, I just have my baby, so after I get her settled with, I definitely tend to join their book club. They have a lot of good resources here. A lot.
She pockets a novel and heads to her car.
Could we, it, would it be possible to sit in your car or my car for just a second to talk a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that okay?
Well, let me put this in my car.
Okay.
You can walk with me.
Cute purse.
Thank you.
Kay says she started coming to Motherful about 3 months ago, pretty late in her pregnancy. She's from a small town in Northeast Ohio, but she's in Columbus to go to school at Ohio State.
So, yeah, this definitely has been extremely helpful for me in my journey as a mother. So,
how so?
So, I don't have family and I don't have the resources. So, when you don't have the resources, you have to go and find them. And this has been a huge help. Not only, you know, they offer diapers and all that good stuff, but they also offer community. And I think that's the most important thing, especially when you're a single mother by yourself. There's other single mothers that can relate to you. So I think that's the most important thing, that it offers community.
Some of the moms at the pantry today qualify for a government program called the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, also known as WIC. It's kind of like food stamps, but it's only for pregnant people and anyone whose children are under 5.
Are you using WIC?
I am. Yes, I am.
And what's that been like?
It's been very helpful, especially with a formula outage. It's still hard to find formula, but, you know, you don't really have to worry about the price. That's been good.
Okay, full disclosure. I've been a public health mother-baby nurse for over 10 years. I've helped lots of people connect with WIC, and my mom used it in the 1980s. But I had never used it myself until pandemic lockdowns. I didn't love it.
I had a baby not too long ago, and I was using WIC. And for me and our family, it was about like $40 a month, basically, was kind of what it equaled out to.
Yeah.
Which isn't huge, I'll be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not, it doesn't cover all of your...
At all. But, yeah, it doesn't. I have to agree with you, but a little bit is, I'm still grateful for the little bit that it does provide, but it would be nice if they provide a little bit more, you know, but.
Yeah. And then one of the other things that I found using it too is that it can be kind of complicated because you have to buy certain foods and not every grocery store even.
Yes, I've definitely found that. Not every grocery store even takes WIC, and then you have to scan it, and then just a lot. I've definitely dealt with that. Just trying to find foods that qualify for WIC can be extremely hard and annoying.
I want to jump in here to explain what we're talking about. You can only use WIC to buy certain types of food. The idea here is that by limiting choices, WIC is guiding pregnant and parenting people to healthier food, like whole grain options. Also, participants have to make monthly visits to a nutritionist. That can be hard for busy parents. WIC sees itself as more of a health intervention than a food security program. And to be fair, studies have shown that WIC participants have less premature birth and low birth weight. But they have a big problem. Less than half the people who are eligible for WIC actually use it, about 43%. That's compared to 84% of eligible food stamps users, a program with much less restrictions and rules. It's difficult to know exactly why participation is so low, but as a user, I can tell you that besides the food restrictions and the mandatory visits, there's also a shaming factor.
And there were times when I would get to the register and the person ringing me up didn't really know how to ring up WIC.
Yeah.
And then it's like all your business is everybody's business.
Yes. It can be uncomfortable. That's happened to me, like, and they're screaming, well, I don't know how to use WIC. And they just scream to the whole world. Why don't you just tell the whole world about my business? Why don't you? I think they definitely should train the individuals a little bit more on WIC. Definitely confidentiality as well. Not everyone wants people to know that they're on WIC. That's just the honest truth.
And they should be able to know how to use
because
it.
Because there's stigma. Yeah. Like, you don't know if the guy behind you in line is going to be like, you're welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
For my tax dollars.
Yeah. And that's actually happened before with me.
So one time, Kay was shopping with her sister. They were at the register when the man in line behind them started to laugh.
And he was like, I'm glad my government or government told, he said something about government, pays your food. And we just kept on walking. It was very uncomfortable for me. And I'm not used to that. So, yeah, definitely confidentiality. Not everybody wants the people to know that they're on WIC, but it's nothing to be ashamed of. Honest. I had to learn that. I had to humble myself and learn. It's not a bad thing. It just has a negative connotation to it, which is unfortunate because a lot of women do need WIC.
How did you convince yourself that it wasn't anything to be ashamed of? Where did that come from?
I guess it just came in from internalizing me and my own insecurities of using governmental assistance. Like, it's not, a lot of women use it, and it's okay to use it. Especially if you don't have the resources, what can you do? I didn't have the resources at the time, so I mean, it's nothing to be ashamed of. Nothing at all. You're a new mom, you're a woman, and I'm a single mom at that, so I'm just using resources that they've given, you know what I mean? So,
which don't even cover your whole bill.
It doesn't even cover my whole
bill. Not even half.
Not even half. Not even a quarter, I don't think.
Each state has their own restrictions and rules when it comes to WIC, and some of them don't feel like a health decision. They feel like a budget decision. In Indiana, where I live, you have to buy the least expensive eggs and milk available. You can get organic produce, but you're not allowed to buy organic shelf-stable food or organic baby food. And it can be hard for stores, too. Each grocery store that wants to be a vendor must stock a minimum amount of WIC-approved foods at all times. It can be hard for some local independent stores to meet that requirement, especially international markets. For them, most of the brands and types of food available through WIC are culturally irrelevant for their customers. Here's Rugi again.
You know, being an immigrant, it's a whole new process. It's like being reborn. You have to first unlearn and then learn. When you come here, you've got all kind of information. It took me a while to go through the right channels. I even thought if you take benefits, you will never be documented because they hold it against you. So it takes you a while to just realize that this is just for the child, you know. So I had WIC with my second child.
Rugi is Muslim and likes to shop at halal stores.
They don't take WIC, so it's a problem. I don't know what should be done. Small businesses working with WIC and working with all small business owners so WIC could be accessible to the people. They have to go to a regular grocery stores. And most of the time, when I first started, what I was getting wouldn't even work for me. But I still have just to take it and try it.
You're listening to a story about the single mom's collective, Motherful. In September, President Biden took to the podium to talk food policy.
Welcome to the White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health.
Good morning. Thank you very much. It's been over 50 years since President Nixon convened the original White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health. That single conference and the laws that inspired it led to transformational change that has helped millions of Americans live healthier lives for generations.
So WIC came out of that first conference and was up and running by 1974. Since then, lots of changes have been made to the program, but the changes have been to which kind of cereal, how many grams of sugar in the juice. Never should we really be dictating the foods pregnant and parenting people can eat. This year, even more program changes are coming, mostly to get people to sign up. You can visit our website to hear an interview with leadership at the USDA for more there. Meanwhile, the collective at Motherful is holding it down for single moms in Central Ohio.
We don't tell you how to vote, but we are an open, progressive nonprofit.
Here's Rugi again.
We support the Black Lives Matter. We support the LGBTQ plus community. We support all immigrants, no matter what their status is. We would support any woman, no matter what her choice is, but we are a pro-choice movement. So we're just an open movement, inclusive, that try to be also wholesome, not only work with moms, but try to take care of all the needs that a single mother's family can have.
The food pantry is just one of the ways Motherful supports single moms. Their core values include reparative justice and health care for all. They host community dinners and bi-weekly Zoom calls with guest speakers. It's more than a place to find food or baby items. It's a politically aware hug around about 325 single moms and their families.
They're not being CEOs. It's mothers like us. We're all together. We are consulted at every level. It's a partnership. I have my own programs here. I get to have inputs and to say, this is what I want to see happen. And they make it happen. I make it happen. They give me the space, the voice. We talk. We decide this is something that is relevant, and we will do it.
Like I said, community is the best resource, I would say. Just community, knowing that others have went through the same thing I've went through, is definitely comforting.
What does that mean for you when you keep saying community? Like, what does that really look like on a day-to-day for you?
If you're feeling down postpartum, you can always ask a friend to, you know, go out. People still check up on me in the community. And not only that, they have an app for Motherful where you can tell your feelings and other women can, you know, reply and give you hope. That's what...
Have you been using that?
I have. I have a lot.
In the middle of the night?
In the middle of the night. Like, I'm feeling a little depressed. So...
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I know about that 3 a.m. thing where you just wake up.
Yeah, that's...
What is this?
No, it's a real thing. It's real. It's real.
It's like... Where's my mommy?
Back at the food pantry, I sat down with Heidi Howes. She's co-founder and co-director of Motherful. It's time for her baby to nurse, so we settle into chairs in an upstairs room. Kids are playing, and somebody's vacuuming downstairs. I asked Heidi how WIC relates to Motherful's plan for food justice.
We do have a partner through WIC that we just recently connected with, who is a mom who works there. And so we're looking into it, but, you know, we're just looking for resources that we can just give to moms with no barriers to entry, with no requirements, you know. It's like, you need it, here it is. And so that's what we're all about. Personally, I may qualify for WIC right now. I'm not sure. I've had WIC in the past, but I actually didn't like WIC in the past because it was dairy and we don't eat dairy, or I don't eat dairy. But I know now they do have fresh vegetables, and that was something that I think I got on the tail end when my last child was born. But I haven't signed up for WIC now.
I was a teen mom, and I definitely took place with WIC for multiple times because I have three daughters.
Here's Lisa Woodward again. She and Heidi started Motherful together. I asked her how Motherful's resource pantry is different from the WIC program.
How is it different? This is a collective and a community. When I was going through the WIC system, there was not any sisterhood with other of the WIC clients. Our food pantry and garden, it's more free. You can get how much you need, and you can come multiple times. We don't have any like direct nutritional counseling like WIC has, but we do have moms that they share information all the time just about healthy eating. There's also a lot of different local orgs that deal with nutrition. And so we're connected. So when they have programming, we do post it on our site. But we partner up with WIC for their farmers markets. So we were there. Folks were coming to get food, and then they would also find out about our programming too. And we look forward to tabling with them again as needed. Most of the people that come through WIC are new moms or pregnant moms. So that's really good for us because most of our moms have are not adding to their family. And so it's good that we have those, can help those moms too that are new moms that, and you're a single mom. That's like a double, that's a double whammy. So we encourage those connections.
If you could imagine like food for single mothers, someone such as yourself, like in your wildest dreams, like what would you want for someone in your position but from the government?
I would say like for a period of time, just covering, I would just say like at least half of the expenses. It can be extremely hard. I'm not saying if you're working and if you're able to work, I would say half. But if you're not able to work, I feel like due to you having a child and stuff, I feel like the government should assist mothers, single mothers, especially when they're single. You can't go to work because you just had a baby. I think they should.
Some people call that unpaid labor.
Meaning,
when you're taking care of your baby, it is work, right? Like you're working.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You don't get paid.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Not even having the baby, just carrying the baby itself, having to worry about your fat feet and then everything else that comes with pregnancy, that's hard work. That is extremely hard work, having to deal with the insecurities of your body after. That's hard work that you have to do internally. There's so much components to pregnancy, even after pregnancy, that women have to deal with. That's work to me. That's work. So that's labor for me.
You know, the ultimate dream would be like every household has a garden. Like there's a gardening committee that comes to your house and puts the garden in, and it comes every week and helps you weed and teaches you. And then also fresh, healthy food is delivered to mom's houses, period. Preferably cooked. that's actually what we would love to do here at Motherful, is to have prepared foods that we can just give to moms, because it's impossible to do all of these things, you know, as one person in a family. And why not, you know? So bring the fresh, healthy food right to the doors of moms so that they can, you know, take a bath instead of cooking that meal, you know? Because it's really, really hard work being a mom, you know, raising children, and you're sore, your body hurts, you know. you just need a minute to rest and decompress, and so you can be in, you know, your full state of love and care to give that to your children, you know. Because if moms are good, everybody's good.
Yeah. Just the highest quality of produce and the prepared food thing, that's definitely high on my list. And just someone to help our garden just multiply.
I'm a type. And that's organic too?
No, that's what.
Back in the garage, everybody packs up for the day. Rugi likes to check in at the inn to see about the tomatoes. If there are any left, she takes them home.
Sunday. So I ran out of tomato paste, and today I want to make somebody.
Oh, yeah.
He needs a lot of tomato. I make everything from scratch.
Our ultimate goal as an organization is to build a co-housing village here in Columbus, Ohio, and then to take the model of the Motherful organization and build chapters throughout the world. you know, so that other moms can be empowered to work together for better lives for themselves and their children. And also, ultimately, to uplift the matriarchy. Yeah. I just see that mothers in power with each other and others, as opposed to power over, which is a patriarchal model, you know, if mothers are in power, like, people are going to be loved. They're going to be fed. They're going to be housed. They're going to be clothed. They're going to be taken care of, you know? And it's just, it's a no-brainer. So if we can get moms out from under the invisibility and out from under the straight-up slavery of reproductive labor and get them into leadership, you know, while they're also being taken care of, you know, and bring children into our common spaces again too, you know, I think that that's going to change the world when moms are running things. It's going to be so much better, and it's just a matter of time.
You seem convinced.
I mean, don't you see it? You know, it has to happen. We can't, I mean, it's that or destruction. Absolute destruction, you know, unless we bring the matriarchal ways back into the forefront. And by that I mean valuing life, valuing the sacred life of all, and love and nurturing and care and interconnectedness and all these things that, you know, colonialism, capitalism, patriarchy, white supremacy, all these things that have been suppressed and killed and due to those powers. Like, when we bring back the matriarchy, when we bring back the matriarchal ways, then we'll be able to save our planet and save ourselves. So it has to happen, or else it's death, you know? Matriarchy is life.
And we're wrapping up another edition of Feminist Magazine. Don't forget, you can find all the links from our program today on our website, feministmagazine.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, and sharing behind-the-scenes photos on Instagram. Our programs are archived in the kpfk.org audio archives. You can find our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and via the Stitcher app on your phone, too. Thanks for listening.
The recent fires in Los Angeles County displaced thousands of families. As debris clearance continues, residents can apply for permits to rebuild their home. Specific requirements in the application to rebuild varies by city or community of residence.
Los incendios recientes en el condado de Los Ángeles desplazaron a miles de familias. A medida que avanza la limpieza de escombros, los residentes pueden solicitar permisos para reconstruir su casa. Los requisitos y la solicitud específicos para la reconstrucción varía según la ciudad o comunidad de residencia.
Information about how to apply for a rebuilding permit in your specific community is on the Los Angeles County Public Works website at dpw.lacounty.gov.
Hay más información sobre el proceso de reconstrucción en su comunidad en la página web del Departamento de Obras Públicas del Condado de Los Ángeles.
This message is brought to you by Radio Bilingüe Public Radio.
Are you a new listener, or has your membership lapsed? KPFK would like to invite you to become a sustainer for as little as $5 per month. Our goal is to reach 500 new friends before our next fund drive starts in April. You can help us reach that goal by becoming a sustainer of KPFK at $5 per month. You just call 818-985-5735 and press option 2. Or go online to kpfk.org and click on Donate to make your contribution. If we can reach the goal of 500 sustainers before our upcoming spring fund drive, we'll be able to cut down the number of days in that drive. And of course, your recurring donation helps fund quality programming on KPFK. Setting up the monthly payments is quick and easy and goes a long way in supporting your community radio station. Once again, kpfk.org, and click on Donate, or 818-985-5735.